This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The developing countries, particularly in Africa, serve as, I will say, the dumping ground for cars that are no longer considered safe enough or clean enough for developed countries.
That was Inger Andersen, executive director of the UN Environment Programme, on how millions of used vehicles exported from Europe, the United States and Japan to the developing world are of poor quality. Details coming up. Also, Senegal's President Macky Sall terminates the functions of all his ministers. And the main opposition presidential candidate in Tanzania's election rejects the poll results. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Senegal's President Macky Sall dissolved his government late yesterday without explanation. A statement emailed from Sall's office said he has terminated the functions of all ministers, including the head of finance and budget. But ministers and state secretaries will maintain their functions until a new government is named. The main opposition presidential candidate in Tanzania's election has rejected poll results, claiming widespread fraud and irregularities. The Chadema party's Tundu Lissu urged the international community not to accept figures emerging from yesterday's voting. The ruling party and the government spokespeople have said they will make no comment until after the vote count is done, but preliminary results show most ballots being cast for the ruling party, Chama cha Mapinduzi, which could leave the opposition weakened. A new report by the UN Environment Programme, UNEP, says millions of used vehicles exported from Europe, the United States, and Japan to the developing world are of poor quality, contributing significantly to air pollution and hindering efforts to mitigate the effects of climate change. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
The report shows that between 2015 and 2018, 14 million used light-duty vehicles were exported worldwide. Some 80% went to low- and middle-income countries, with more than half going to Africa. Inge Andersen is the executive director of the UN Environment Programme, or UNEP.
The global vehicle fleet is set to double by 2050, with 90% of the growth happening in non-OECD countries. In many developing countries, this growth will be fueled by imported used vehicles. But the current way the used vehicle market operates means that developing countries, particularly in Africa, serve as, I will say, the dumping ground for cars that are no longer considered safe enough or clean enough for developed countries.
She says such cars are exacerbating air pollution.
So continuing this practice will mean more pollution, air pollution, which, as we already know, air pollution causes about 7 million premature deaths each year. And that air pollution will continue to rise while hindering the efforts of importing countries to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions and exposing them to road safety issues.
The first report of its kind calls for action to fill the current policy vacuum with the adoption of harmonized minimum quality standards that will ensure used vehicles contribute to cleaner, safer fleet in importing countries. Kwabena Frimpong Boateng is Ghana's environment minister.
In 2018, Ghana imported 80,000 used light-duty vehicles. This is about 5% of all imports from Africa. Our main concerns regard to used vehicles are air pollution, certainly emission of greenhouse gases, and then the poor quality of used vehicles on our roads, certainly safety. There's also element of high fuel consumption.
The fast-growing global vehicle fleet is a major contributor to air pollution and climate change. Globally, UNEP officials say the transport sector is responsible for nearly a quarter of energy-related global greenhouse gas emissions. Jane Akumu is a program officer at UNEP's Sustainable Mobility Unit.
A big percentage or proportion of traditional vehicle fleets in most of the developing countries are actually used. For example, a country like Malawi, 97% of their additional vehicle fleet are actually used. And that is the same story in most African countries that allow import of used vehicles. And one of the challenges that we found is that there's very little information on used vehicles. What is the quality? What are the quantities?
The report found that some two-thirds of the 146 countries that were analyzed have weak or very weak policies to regulate imports of used vehicles. However, it also shows that countries which have implemented measures to govern such imports, notably age and emissions standards, get access to high-quality used vehicles, including hybrid and electric cars, at affordable prices. For example, Morocco only permits the import of vehicles less than 5 years old and those meeting the Euro 4 European vehicles emission standard. As a result, it receives only relatively advanced and clean used vehicles from Europe. Ghana is also taking steps toward the right direction, as Boateng explains.
The implementation of policy consideration on cleaner bus standard and sustainable public transport in Accra, this was done in 2017, they have adopted fuel economy or efficiency and CO2 emission standards for large duty vehicles. This was adopted in 2017.
The report found that Africa imported the largest number of used vehicles, constituting 40% in the period studied, followed by Eastern Europe with 24% and Asia Pacific 15%. Poor quality used vehicles also lead to more road accidents. According to the report, many of the countries with very weak or weak used vehicles regulations, including Malawi, Nigeria, Zimbabwe and Burundi, also have very high road traffic death rates. Countries that have introduced used vehicles regulations also see safer fleets and fewer accidents. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Like elsewhere in the world, images are flashing across TV screens in South Africa of people not observing regulations that could protect them and others from COVID-19. Police say they are also arresting more people for organizing and attending mass events in contravention of the Disaster Management Act. Scientists say it is a dangerous trend that could cause a spike of infections and fatalities and make a second wave of COVID-19 in South Africa much more deadly. Darren Taylor reports.
A survey of thousands of South Africans' views on the pandemic has revealed they're much less afraid of contracting the coronavirus than they were just a few months ago.
And of course, that level of decreased fear means that people are not taking public health measures as seriously.
Dr. Karen Runciman is a researcher at the Center for Social Change.
Not wearing masks every time that they go out, a greater number of people reporting having gone to large gatherings with more than 50 people. And again, obviously, the less compliant people are with public health measures, the greater the likelihood of transmission of the virus.
Scientists say this is exactly what's happening, with almost all cities reporting more infections and deaths the past 3 weeks. Runciman says her study shows a very dangerous opinion is contributing to this.
A greater number of adults think the threat of the coronavirus has been exaggerated. So what we see is in the hard lockdown, only about 3 in 10 adults say that they think the threat of the coronavirus is exaggerated. As we come now to September, we see that number growing and it's now 4 in 10.
She says this may seem like a small increase in skepticism, but it translates into millions of people not taking the pandemic seriously.
And it underscores the importance for continued and strong public health messaging, you know, not just around wearing of masks, but also the importance of hand washing. You know, we have to remind ourselves that those little squirts of sanitizer that we get when we walk into the shops, you know, are not enough in and of themselves. Hand washing continues to be one of the best ways to protect ourselves.
Runciman says laxness is normal this far into a pandemic, so the government should cooperate with mental health experts to find strategies to overcome it.
What also is very important coming through the survey findings is the considerable economic distress and impact the pandemic has had on people. So the survey shows that 4 in 10 adults are going to bed hungry, and this is nearly double what it would be before the pandemic.
So the researcher says it's critical that the state provides more social relief to the poor as a way to stem the tide of new infections.
In my analysis, I think when people are weighing up the real risk of hunger and that real feeling and the threat of catching something that you can't see and you can't touch, that is playing a real role here in people's pandemic fatigue. So we have to think about this as a coordinated response, thinking about not just the mental health impacts, but also the economic impacts, and trying to address those together as far as we can.
President Cyril Ramaphosa's office says he'll address the nation soon about the recent rise in infections and deaths. He's expected to remind South Africans of their responsibilities in curbing the spread of COVID-19 and to threaten a return to a hard lockdown if they fail to listen. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwohib in Washington. Here is a recap of our top stories. Without any explanation, Senegal's President Macky Sall dissolves his government. And the main opposition presidential candidate in Tanzania's election has rejected poll results, claiming widespread fraud and irregularities. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. It's over 3 months since nurses went on strike in Zimbabwe, and a month since teachers also declared they were too incapacitated to go to work. Inflation has dramatically eroded the incomes of civil servants, but their calls for better salaries in U.S. dollars have often been labeled as political. That has changed. Reporter Kudzai Zenawashi has more from Harare.
The job action by medical practitioners comes as the local media recently reported what looks like a threat on the strikers. A reported government plan to enlist doctors into the army, which would prevent them from striking or leaving the country in search of greener pastures. Dr. Dean Doro is with the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association.
These measures are not welcome amongst doctors. I think they just hinders their right to freedom of practice, be it in Zimbabwe and also be it in outside the country. And I think it's the fact of kind of trying to cut off the brain drainage which has been going on for the past few years without addressing the real issues at hand.
He highlights adequate medicines, equipment and pay. And there have been reports of government's intention to cancel employment for striking nurses and re-engage them on a contract basis. Simbarashe Tafirenyika is the president of the Zimbabwe Urban and Rural Council Nurses Workers Union.
All those sentiments or statements being published in the media, they are intimidatory messages. They want to intimidate nurses, they want to intimidate even other health workers. What is needed is to improve the working areas.
He says the idea of contracts may backfire as nurses take their skill beyond borders where their pay is better and they are highly in demand in light of the pandemic. Teachers have not been reporting to work for a month despite government efforts to catch up with COVID-19 disruptions in the education calendar. Obed Masaraure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe's education system is collapsing. Zimbabwe's education system is in a mess. It is in a mess because the government has neglected the fundamentals, particularly paying teachers a decent wage, a living wage. Now we have a scenario where teachers are expected to be in the classroom teaching other people's kids when they cannot afford to have their own children in the same class.
He says teachers cannot afford clothes, transport and health care, not to mention a retirement plan. In his State of the Nation address last week, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said talks with Labour were progressing well and the outcry by civil servants was justified.
Government takes note of the legitimate calls for better working conditions by our teachers, health workers, and the public service in general. We will do our best to ameliorate their concerns and improve their plight.
Workers worried the president was only paying lip service to their concerns, as his words are yet to be translated into action. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zwinamashe from Harare.
Doctors have testified that former Gambian dictator Yahya Jammeh used to force people to test his fake HIV/AIDS cure without their permission, and some became seriously ill or died. Reporter Pandera Mbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
It was in 2007 that Jammeh claimed that God gave him a mandate to cure HIV, the virus that scientists say causes AIDS, using traditional herbs. Jammeh assembled doctors to work with him during his treatment program. One was Dr. Malik Njai, the former medical director of the main hospital in Banjul, who has testified before the Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission. Njai recalled Jammeh telling him that he had found a cure for HIV. Njai wasn't convinced.
I told him straight away that I didn't believe him and that he, as president, should concern himself with governing the state rather than curing HIV. He should leave that to us. We have a national program and it's working very well. So leave that to us. Stay out of it. He said, you're done your brainwash. He said I was brainwashed by the Tubabs, white people. He said that was why I was saying that to him.
Njai says Jammeh never heeded to his advice. Jammeh then opened an alternative HIV treatment program that started with 9 HIV patients. He later appointed Njai as health minister and asked him to help review the program. Njai says none of the patients that Jammeh claimed to have treated tested negative for the virus.
We still do not have a cure for HIV. I was absolutely certain of what I was saying. What we could do was control the disease. And up to today, worldwide, there is only one case that's supposed to have been cured. And further investigation of that case has revealed that the condition that that person had and the way he was treated was what rendered him virus-free, but he wasn't cured. So there's no cure for HIV.
Njai says one of the young patients died during the first batch of the treatment program. Also testifying was Dr. Adama Amadou Salah, who called Jammeh a charlatan delusional leader whose conduct was a risk to health safety. He says the doctors who worked with Jammeh should have ensured that such a misleading treatment program should never have happened without regulatory oversight to ensure patient safety. But not everyone dismissed Jammeh's claims. Dr. Tamsir Mbow served as manager of the AIDS treatment program. Confronted by the TRRC lead counsel, Esafal, he stood by his claims that Jammeh had a cure for HIV. For VOA News, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The South African government has announced a 3-year wage increase freeze for all public servants to save the economy from collapse. But unions for the workers say they will shut down the public service if that happens. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
In Parliament yesterday, Finance Minister Tito Mboweni painted a gloomy picture of the economy. The gross domestic product is expected to contract by 7.8% and tax revenue is predicted to fall by up to $20 billion. He made it clear that cutting government spending and reducing the wage bill require urgent attention to arrest the ballooning government debt, which has risen to $244 billion. Mboweni says public servants use 40% of government total spending.
We cannot allow ourselves to move towards a sovereign debt crisis.
However, public servants are having none of it. Ruben Malega is the general manager of the Public Servants Association.
It's going to meet fire with fire because as we speak right now, all unions, we are going to table demands for next year. Come the time that we table demands and they don't come to the party, they will find us in the street. And if it means that we shut down the whole public service for months, we'll do so.
He said the union is further angered by the government's move to bail out South African Airways with over $600 million instead of getting the money from those whose corruption and looting battered the national flag carrier. Opposition parties have accused the government of using state funds to replenish the pockets of the looters. Jordan Hill-Lewis is the Shadow Minister of Finance for the Democratic Alliance Party.
I think it's actually an immoral choice to make to prioritise our very scarce public funds for South African Airways when so many families are suffering right now, they've lost income during lockdown, and when all of our basic services on which South Africans depend are under so much pressure.
On the economic recovery and social services fronts, about $30 billion has been put aside to provide a lifeline to struggling industries, create jobs, boost healthcare services, and provide social grants to the poor. But Business South Africa Chief Executive Officer Cass Covandia says there is little hope of economic recovery when looking at some of the government's decisions.
Debt is going up. The revenue shortfall is going up. We keep putting money into projects that have absolutely no possibility of a social or economic return. And it's quite clear from the budget and from the situation we are in that government cannot lead economic growth.
Finance Minister Mboweni is expected to meet with ratings agencies amid high speculation that they might downgrade the country's economic ratings, further pushing the economy into deep recession. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is the voice of America's Sonny Young. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for the sunny side of sports. On Fridays, you can also hear my expanded 30-minute edition of the show at 17:30 UTC, right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America.